We have to get knowledge from the scriptures. And so say, si Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So Kani translated all these books into English and given commentaries like that. So we started this whole program called Bhakti Shastri with the Bhagavad Gita, Upanishad, Upadeshamrita, like that. Yeah. We finished our first semester, and now tonight we're starting our second semester, right? Which will be Bhagavad Gita, first six chapters, and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami, the first part, the first wave. So Bhagavad Gita, the first six chapters talk about what is his material nature, like that. You know? Then middle six chapters specifically talk about devotional service. But unless we understand how spirit is different than matter, we're bound to think that all your spiritual activities are also material. These are students. Srinivas. You are a student.
I just don't understand.
Okay. Yeah. So one time we're in the temple of Miami, and like this evening program, a few people there, a little bit funny. You know. So one boy came in, and he was visiting. He lived in the neighborhood, so he was coming in and out again, visiting, a little bit like that. So he listened to the class, and afterwards he said, last night I went to the Pink Flamingo with my girlfriend, Juana. And we danced and drank and danced until 1 o'clock in the morning. And it was so spiritual. Okay. Yeah. So that's why Bhagavad Gita chapters 7 through 12 talk about spiritual activity, serving Krishna, the super soul, we're all related to him, like that. But before you can talk about that, you're going to talk about what is matter and sort of distinguish what is spiritual from what is simply a very high sensual stimulation. The first six chapters and last six chapters are talk like that. It's like a book. That's from cover, right? You know, to protect it. Okay, you see a book. This is a hard cover. Okay? So the middle six chapters are like that, and the first and last are like that. Okay? So those first six chapters we're going to start today. And okay, so here I have it. You can download this from the internet. www.jayarama.us/archive/tpp. Kavapachapachi.org. It's a whole study guide. And the second chapter starts on page 86. Second chapter, revised, 2009, August 5th. Hare Krishna, esteemed friends and enemies. I don't write these things. Let us just begin by thanking His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who has so kindly brought us these teachings of Sri Rupa Goswami. Thank you for your association. Yes. Personally, we feel like wounded soldiers full of bullet holes. We are now in San Jose, California, and we are confronted by so many problems with body and society. But we know that if we just go on ahead with the process of Bhakti Shastri in your association, our results will be ever-increasing in comprehension and bliss. So this is our position. Still have many problems. You know? But basically, as long as we're in the material world, we're in a problem. But if you can get a hold of this Vaidhi Bhakti, Sadhana Bhakti, yeah, then we see that we can go on like that. Yeah. One devotee, Western devotee, he wrote to Prabhupada and he said, I can't stop thinking about sex life. Yeah. And the Prabhupada said, because of the birth you've taken, you won't be able to stop thinking about it. Yeah. The door open. Difficult. I mean, they're closed.
Close.
When it opens, it'll be kind of
okay.
So that's what he said. Because. Close it. Yeah, there you go. Right. Because of the birth you've taken, you won't be able to stop learning about these things. He said, but if you engage in devotional service, you'll be able to tolerate it. So all of us have different problems from the body, and we're going to have them at the moment of our death. Because Krishna doesn't want us to be attached to these things. He wants us to suffer. Right? You know? In the prison, do they want the prisoners to be happy? The very good prisoners who are about to get out, the parole board comes, they talk to you, they talk to the psychologist, they talk to the guards, everybody else. This guy's really completely reformed his character. He's really sorry for what he did. He's a good person now. He's supposed to stay for 2 more years. Well, it's a waste of time. So they tell you, okay, we're doing, but we're going to recommend you go to the governor, you get released.
Okay.
But it takes a little time to go through the paperwork like that. Yeah? But the governor has never rejected one of our recommendations one time in 40 years, no governor. So you're out. Yeah? But it'll take like, you know, 3 weeks for the papers to be processed. Okay. So this is our sometimes our position in the material world. So what happens then? Do the guards become more relaxed with you or something? No, they become more strict. They don't want to see you like, you know, fall into bad association, a bit of the fighting or something like that, and in the last, like, you know, 1 month. So especially as a devotee, right to the very end, there'll be problems, there'll be agitations. Just, so you're never attached to this material world, this nasty body. But I love my body. I look in the mirror and so, oh, it's a donkey. Stinky donkey. Oh, I said bad things. Okay. Best use of a bad bargain. Yeah. So, we're all like that. But as soon as we get devotional service and that kind of thing, then we can just tolerate it. It's okay. It's good. It's nice if these things are going on, so I don't become attached. Yeah. And then we go on now, especially published books. It's one of the easiest ways to meditate is to read. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Ah. It says here. For the second semester, we will study chapters 1 through 6 of Bhagavad Gita as it is. And the first wave of Nectar of Devotion. Here's our calendar. Okay, here's the calendar. It's, how's it going? Okay, 2 weeks for the first chapter, 4 weeks for the second chapter, 2 weeks for the third chapter, 3 weeks for the fourth chapter. It's about 17.75 pages, right? You know, per week. 17 pages a week. Is that okay? Yeah, not so much. If you want to do something. Yeah. If it's not, 274 pages for 6 chapters, divided by 16 weeks equals 17.25 pages per chapter. That's it. Yeah. Otherwise it becomes too slow and you get spaced out. Then December 9th, we have our evaluations. Nectar of Devotion and Dhanadhar Swami's commentary, Waves of Devotion, are only 65 pages total. So we can start those a little later. We have 16 weeks. Huh? Okay, 15th of August to 15th December. So 65 pages is not much. It's 15, 16 weeks. Okay. So we still could kind of get those kind of scheduled like that. Mm-hmm.
So, Bhagavad Gita and Nectar of Devotion, then we go 7
pages a day? Yeah, so you got to kind of figure out.
17 pages of Bhagavad Gita every week.
Yeah.
And how many pages of that?
Well, it kind of went over. It's more like it's divided in sections. There's the induction. Then there's, he goes through the first part, the Eastern Way. Yeah. Is Samanya Bhakti, general principles like that. So, for example, there's 6 characteristics to devotional service. It puts an end to all the stress. What else does it do? It creates all auspiciousness. Like 6 things like that. And 2 occur in the level of sadhana bhakti, the end of all the stress, which I mean, they're auspicious. Then the last 2 is the only way to attract Krishna, and Sambhavani produces inconceivable, impenetrable bliss. And the middle ones are divine liberation, and it's rarely achieved. Yeah, rarely achieved as in Bhava Bhakti. In Pema Bhakti, you get this point of and the happiness which is so intense that nothing can penetrate it. About stabbing you in the eye, doesn't penetrate your bliss.
So Maharaj, the 65 pages are from Dhamdham Maharaj. How about the Nectar of Devotion?
No, together it's the 65. Yeah, not very much. Because his explanation is very, very nice. You need to do that together like that. Because Prabhupada had to do Nectar of Devotion very quickly. He was doing everything else. And also many of the terms are, it's a very technical book. The terms are very technical. And so the Prabhupada even translated these into English. You see, Dhanadhar Maharaj explained what the Sanskrit means, how the devotees know some more Sanskrit. You see, well, that's why Prabhupada put it that way. But it's not really exactly obvious. For example, which is the highest? Spontaneous devotional service, ecstatic devotional service, or pure devotional service? Well, one is Bhava Bhakti, one is Raghunuga Bhakti, and one is Prema Bhakti. So yeah, it's kind of like, well, probably define Raghunuga Bhakti as spontaneous devotion service, Bhava Bhakti as ecstatic devotion service, and Prema Bhakti as pure devotion service. It's kind of like you know. And I think after that, he maintained that. When he was writing his purport, he maintained that same, standard like that. And he was saying about Mars Barge had achieved the platform of ecstatic devotional service. What is Bhagavad Gita? So probably almost kind of like standardized the English language in terms of spiritual words like that. We use certain English words in a precise sense. Like, you know, when we talk about spiritual, about a good time of wana. I think from Indo. Yeah. Okay. That's kind of a rough outline. Then we got to figure out, like, you know, what do we got? Over here, folks, over here. Okay. Somebody here? Anybody? Over there? Good evening. We're discussing our academic program. Where are you from? Oh, muy buenas noches.
Yeah. Somos de México, pero vivimos en Cuna.
Oh, okay.
¿Qué
aquí? ¿Qué? Yo no sé. Cerca. ¿Ah, sí?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Me llamo Hanuman. Es un mono muy famoso. So we have a course, a class on these books like that, systematic. And they're starting the second semester, so we're going to go over that a little bit. We're going to have something more entertaining than this place. ¿Está bien? ¿También si quieres? ¿Quieres sentir en la sofa? ¿Es mejor? ¿Mejor? ¿Sí? Okay. Yeah. If it becomes too difficult, please.
We should do this. 30 years or something.
So that's kind of the schedule. The book. We just have to decide then maybe when to do Nectar of Devotion, because it's like, you know, different parts like that. Almost like one, maybe like an introduction, and then 1 week for each of the six different aspects of devotional service. Okay. So we serve God, and we become free from distress.
Okay.
Everything becomes auspicious. Then we don't even care about, you know, salvation. We can only serve Him. Okay. Isn't that true? God, the concept of liberation. Oh, and it's very difficult to become a servant of God. Okay. And then finally, in the most intense levels of the saints, it produces a happiness that's so intense that nothing can penetrate it, no matter what happens. Okay. And that's the only way in the end to find an attraction to Krishna, is this intense love. Okay. Hare Krishna. Where am I now? Put this out. A little robot. A Kimito robot. Okay. Yeah. Catalog. Okay. We tried to get copies of Surendran to me and Bhanu Swami's Bhagavad Gita commentaries, but in the end, here we sit in San Jose with almost nothing except our memories and Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Seems like that is the way we may have to confront most of our preaching programs in life anyway. Ha, ha, ha. So, there are many books. You know, Bhagavad Gita is the central text of all Indian philosophy. It's an uncertain situation on the battlefield and everything. It's a whole story. It's part of the Mahabharata, which is 100,000 verses like that. Biggest book in the world. Big epic. Don Quixote. So you take one section out of there, one dialogue with Sancho Panza and, you know, Dante Alighieri, and says, this is the, everything is summarized, everything is here. So Bhagavad Gita is like that. It's the beginning level, A, B, C, but it's like everything is put together so nicely. Okay. About who are we, what is life, why do good things happen to bad people? If God is beyond words, how can we talk about Him? There's so many, you know, questions everybody has like that. Does faith mean blind faith? So many very basic questions, and Bhagavad Gita answers all of them. Yeah. So, but again, there's so many nice commentaries. We kind of discussed this with Shubhas and San Jose. We're going to start there. We're going to be 40 devotees now. And it was kind of like we're saying, okay, the this level, Bhakti Shastri, just read the Bhagavad Gita. Teachers can look at the commentaries. Okay, now they students forget. Okay, by Baba, okay, you can start to look at commentaries by Burjan. He's taking mostly, I think, Vishnu Chakravarti commentary. and then about the distribution. Very interesting. Very interesting why certain things happen like that. You go through many questions. Because Krishna spoke of 5,000 years ago, at the end of the Age of Bronze, when Merlin the Magician was living. Merlin El Mago. Very subtle atmosphere. Okay. It's coming down, as things get more dense in the age, and different commentaries to make it understandable. Okay. Chapter 1. Okay, A. Look at our Tava Pache Pache overview of chapter 1. I haven't got with me. Okay. Did it last night. So we thought, in the first semester, we did an overview. So for every chapter, we have a little summary like that. Okay. So look at that first. And again. Okay. Analysis. Breaking the study down into little parts, but not forgetting they have a place in the whole. Okay. It's a very important part of knowledge, is analysis. You break things down, put them in different places. But don't forget, you know, that it has a, you know, connection to the whole thing like that. In English, there's a phrase, you can't see the forest from the trees. You can't see the forest from the trees. There's so many trees here. They're part of the forest. Same way, you know, in our study, we're always trying to analyze things like that. But always remember, Krishna says, one should meditate upon the limbs of the Supreme Lord, not forgetting that they're part of his body. One should meditate on the body of the Lord, not forgetting that it has limbs. Okay. We divide chapter 1 into texts 1 through 27 and 28 through 46. In this Bhakti Shastri study, high school, we analyze the chapters for you. But in Bhakti Bhai Baba, bachelor's diploma, you have to do your own analysis. Yes. Text 1 through 27, setting the scene. Bhagavad Gita is a conversation between? No. That comes later. Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya. He's blind. The king is blind. Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya. Okay. Text 1:1 and 2:1. That's where they talk like that. But they're talking about what Arjuna and Krishna said to each other. Duryodhana sees the situation. It is tough. So he goes to the commander-in-chief, Dronacharya. He makes an estimation of the strength of the armies and engages in all kinds of political statements. So he's always saying everything very, very double entendre, two bevels like that. He's the evil guy. Anybody else has good character too, but he has like envy, anger, selfishness, greed. He says, Drupada putrena tava asishena dimata. Is this sarcastic? How did he say it? It's a very emotional book. Actually, you can't understand Bhagavad Gita unless you worship the deity and he appreciates it in a very emotional book. Otherwise, the strict like logic, you know, doesn't explain why people are saying things like that. Yeah? Yeah. So, how do we say this? You know, as it goes here, it says, Krishna, Drupada putrena tava shishena dimata. What does that mean?
Intelligent son of Drupada,
your disciple. Yeah, because he's the person who's the commander-in-chief on the opposite side, and he's arranged this very, very clever, you know, phalanx and people here and this and that. And he says, "Oh, you're the son of Drupada. Who's Drupada?" To Dronacharya. Yeah, your classmates, but then they get up this very intense like disagreement, and finally they were fighting, and he stole the kingdom from him, humiliated him. And then he did a sacrifice, Drupada, and out of the fire came two people.
Draupadi.
There's a late girl. And Drishtadyumna. So Draupadi, when she came out, it said, this girl will be the death of many, many warriors. So I saw a competition of art organized by Bhakti Siddhanta Das and a bank in India. Now Krishna and Rama in modern art. The girl's kind of dead. Oh, so many intense pictures. Second place was Bhishma. Like he's the grandfather of all these guys, going through 100,000 pages of different things happening, you know, and never getting married. You know. So he's very intense, big picture, the size of this wall. You're looking at that from the past, and he has different wrinkles on his face and stuff. You know. As you get closer, each of these wrinkles is a different pastime, like this being stolen or that happening like that. And it's like, wow, what's up? Little bit. So it was second place. So first place by a lady, and it's Draupadi, and she's like, you know, like a young girl, maybe like 16 or something, and she's in her nightdress, and she has a candle like this, and someone knocking her door, someone she knows or something at night. So she opens the door like, well, what is it? Why are you coming so late? Like a little like, you know, curious. You know? And you're thinking, oh yes, Draupadi was a covered flame. Oh, I see the symbolism. But then you're kind of looking at it, and something's bothering you. And finally you see it like that. Yeah? And finally you see what it is. Her shadow is death. And so yeah, she's born to kill all these people, right? But she herself didn't know it, really. Because how could you live if you saw the carnies and bloodshed and death that was going to be because of your beauty, karma, nature, and that. So that's easy to stand for. So it's a whole background like that, and probably in the purport, he talks about this a little bit. Yeah. So basically what he's saying, you're here, just a Jumna, he was foretold, he will kill you. Right? He's the guy who's going to kill you. And so he took him as a student and trained him in how to be one of the greatest generals who ever existed. He's saying, your intelligent student, your enemy like that. So he's very, very double leveled like that. Teacher, you are so impractical that you taught military science to the person whom you knew was destined to kill you, the son of your enemy. Then Duryodhana glorifies Bhishma, but then he thinks the others might be put out of joint because they weren't glorified. Bhishma, the great grandfather, is here to protect us, so we're okay. But of course, all of you people are also like that, very important. And he's an old man, and so you got to like that. He's very he's a politician, always, like that. Yeah. Because they weren't glorified, so he doubles back on his tracks and glorifies everyone else. 111. Bhagavad Gita is a very emotional, personal book. You can't understand it unless you worship the deity. Okay, have you got the scene set? In the purports, Srila Prabhupada fills in a lot of things about the historical background from the Mahabharata. Let's read it. 1 through 27. Take note of important things. Take it to heart. Think about it. Think about teaching it. Yeah. That's the whole purpose we're doing this. Love is not love until you give it away. That's right. Love is not love until you give it away. So education is not education until you teach it. Right? What two things turn to poison? 10 to 27. Undigested food and unused knowledge. Because you become very proud of it. Okay? So you start to use it, you see, well, I need to learn more. I need to know more. Okay? So you start hearing and chanting. That's a whole purpose. Right? You teach this. You learn this one time, the next, you're going to teach it. Right? But yeah, don't worry, we'll help you. Okay, the second time better. Okay, now you can take your Bhakti by Baba certificates. Teach it two times. Text number one. What is the Gita Mahatmya? It is cited at the end of the introduction, but from where it is? It says the Gita Mahatmya glorifies the Bhagavad Gita. Where is it from? I think it's in the Padma Purana. If our internet gets working, we can look for this info. Well, actually, yeah, I looked later. It was Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya speaks it. Okay. What are the three things recommended for studying the Bhagavad Gita properly? What are your motives for studying? In Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that Gandhari didn't agree. Except for that, it goes into the details like that. You have to read through the chapters, and we're giving some suggestions. We're not actually asking the questions so much like this to test, but just to keep reminding that we should be reading to get some knowledge. One class probably said, don't come to these classes just as a ritual. All right, come as a ritual. they said, come to learn something. Learn something. Actually, you have to go after this. Oh, I learned this, I learned that. This concept, this perspective, but also these details, I didn't know. Okay. So, then after that, I have some notes in for the different chapters. On up to how far? 27, right? I have some comments about how I'm studying this thing. Our internet was collapsing. 18, I said, wow. 22 says, heavy. Okay. 24 through 27 says, super important. Hare Krishna. seems to be, oh, here, sorry, here. Okay. Here, Krishna seems to be doing his job. So what's the story? He sees that the armies see each other, you know, they talk about the soldiers, and then, yes, I guess this is the kind of point where it changes like that. Arjuna says, take me in front of the opposing armies so I can see these rascals come here to fight with me, like that, my brothers. Because these guys did a horrible thing. It's a what they call civil war. And then Duryodhana and the cousins are all kind of like, you know, soap opera, telenovela. There's always the evil people, the evil woman. Everybody, you know, just everybody hates her in the soap operas. That's why her job is, to make people, you know, you can't get rid of her, you can't destroy her, she keeps coming back, everybody, you know, ooh, wow. So, everyone likes to hate someone. So Duryodhana and his family are just there. They're also very, very like aristocratic and stuff, you know. But ultimately he has this intense envy and arrogance, you know, which he wants him to destroy the Pandavas, to kill them. He won't even give them five villages, but to speak of half of the kingdom, which is, that whole kingdom is their right. But they're willing to go for half and finding so many tricks and dirty things and horrible things. And so finally it's, you know, a chance to get revenge after 14 years of suffering all this, right? Here Krishna seems to be doing his job as Madan Mohan, Diksha Guru. Out of his mercy, he is putting Arjuna in a situation where he can see the problems of material life. Right? He's going to get his revenge now, okay, but then he puts him right in front of Bhishma and Drona, and he wakes up. Right? That material world is, there's nothing here. But as soon as you turn away from Krishna, away from God, realize what's, then there's nothing. Because God is the source of everything, right? It's his universe, everything else. So when I turn away from God, our relationship with him, loving him, like that, playing with him, everything else, then there's nothing. So how do you create, sort of the game? So when, you're a mathematician, Morgenstern and von Neumann, remember them? Morgenstern, von Neumann? Yeah, they wrote a book called The Theory of Games. Really intense, right after World War II, big code guys. So they had a whole thing about games and everything else. One of them is called the zero-sum game. Okay, we start off, nobody has any money. Okay, after 25 minutes, I have $100. Now, what does that mean? Yeah, somewhere. Yeah, so that's the material world. Yeah. So if my princess is going to be happy now, after all this abuse, I regain her honor, you know, she can tie her hair up. You know, and in the Vedic culture, only a widow has her hair untied. So because she was so insulted, she untied her hair and said, I don't have any husbands. You guys wouldn't protect me properly, so I'm a widow. So for 14 years, she was pushing and pushing me. In the end, Duryodhana was thinking, okay, these other guys will forgive me. It comes down to the other, because they're guys, you know. But Draupadi, the girl, she won't be satisfied until I'm dead. As a fact, I can see that. Doesn't matter what I do, she wants me dead. And that was what he was afraid of. She would keep pushing him. And so finally Arjuna's idea is, okay, after this battle I'll go home and drop all the crowns of these rascals at her feet, and she'll tie her hair up and say, thank you, Arjuna. I feel so happy. And it's righteous. It's like a revenge movie. Every year in the movies, there's a couple of revenge movies. Like the housewife gets her revenge, the family, the kids, you know, or the teacher gets his revenge against all these suffering from the employees. You know, it was so gratifying. And so it's time. Such torment. But then he finally realizes, you know, that if my wife's going to tie her hair up, a lot of other women are going to untie her hair. Because their husband's not coming home tonight. And his son's not coming home tonight. So also. Especially his teacher and his grandfather. So at this point, Krishna's shaking him. Yeah, this is what it means. Let's go beyond just being a materially good man. Let's go beyond honor amongst thieves. Right? Yeah, honor amongst thieves. Yeah, that will go to something higher. But what is it? That's the whole thing. From this point on, basically, Arjuna is just facing this problem. Like that. And he's seeing what's happening. He's getting so many kind of honor amongst thieves solutions. But what if we do this and that, this and that, and then this and that? But none of these things are actually going to work. Okay? Because without God, that's the whole point here, our relationship to Krishna, there's nothing. Okay? It's based upon, he's the cause of all causes, the source of everything. So if we turn away from him, want to own the independent existence, then Prabhupada was there. Prabhupada was coming back from Los Angeles. Yeah, enough for one day, okay. That's it, huh? Oh, yeah. Prabhupada was coming back from coming up from Los Angeles to Berkeley, to San Francisco. And that's, you know, I just joined the temple a couple of years. So he came, you know, landed in San Francisco and came to Berkeley. And then he came and sat on Yasasan. He said, when I was coming up from Los Angeles, the pilot came back to me. It was 1975. I was asking questions. And this is about 2 years ago. I actually saw a video of that. It's a great film of that, the pilot. A big guy. He was standing next to Prabhupada and Prabhupada was talking like that. So he said, Swamiji, if God is all good, why is there evil? This is one of the most basic questions you can ask. It's like, one of our devotees is a soldier in Iraq. He's a master sergeant, very young, but has 140 soldiers under him. So he said he went to this big conference of all these chaplains. To be a chaplain in the army, you have to at least have a master's degree in theology, at least. And the head of the chaplain corps in the army is a 3-star general. So he said, these guys talking, he said, many of them were talking frankly that we're all losing faith in God. Yeah? Because these things could happen. The war in Iraq could happen. These are guys, the spiritual force. Yeah? So it's a very common question. If God is good, then why is there evil? Why do tsunamis happen? Why do wars happen? Why do auto accidents suddenly just eliminate half the people in a family? Yeah? Terrible thing. Terrible thing. So, I probably said to us from San Francisco. So I explained it like this. It's like the sun. From the point of view of the sun, everything is illuminated, right? The sun cannot see darkness. Wherever he looks, he sees light. You know? So from Krishna's point of view, everything is good. Everything is working out okay. From the point of view of the government, the prison is just as good as the Parks and Recreation Department. Isn't it? We just try and eliminate one or the other, but it's for certain people in a certain circumstance. If the prison's working properly, then people get adjusted properly and come back out and they come to their senses like that. Yeah? But to the prisoners inside the prison, it's like, you know, it's a holy war, as long as they're fighting it. So they said from God's point of view, everything is good like that. And as long as we're facing God, all we see is light also. When we turn our back on him, then we see our own enormous shadow. Right? Something not very big, right? But it's big enough to, you know, to down us in, like that. Right? So the whole material world is basically produced, you know, from our own, you know, desire to have to be God and have our own separate existence, like that. Right? Paradise Lost, Paraíso Perdido, Mendoza. Very, probably says this is how it happens. The devil revolts against Satan. He revolts against God. The good angels try to protect him. Ariel, Uriel, Raphael, also. So in the first day, Satan's winning. He's also an archangel. He's his soldier with thousands and millions of followers. And, you know, they're slowly closing in on the throne of God, the King of Heaven. The second day, God starts using the blue lightning. And Satan didn't know about this. The blue lightning. So then they start like pushed back, and finally they fall off the edge of heaven, and it goes down. It's really beautiful at the time now, but intense poetry, that's why it's such a wonderful thing like that. So finally they're cast down into hell and all this stuff and everything else, and they get together and come up, and they come to this conclusion that all we have to do is apologize. Just say, hey, we're sorry, we had a bad day, please forgive us, and we can leave this hell, you know, and go back to heaven. But then the devil says something, which has been quoted by other people in other books. If you want to make a bumper sticker, make a lot of money, just make this. I tell you, make a fortune. Right? Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Maybe that's what the boys are doing, so you'll find some people that way. But that's our attitude, right? It's hell, but it's mine. She's the ugliest, meanest, harshest woman on earth, but she's mine. you can turn it around the other way too. Like he's the most arrogant, pig-headed, stupid man on earth. You know, but he's mocked. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's why we're here. You know, basic principle. Yeah. And okay, we can stay here if you want. You can go on like that. But somehow or other, the whole Bhagavad Gita is like this. Bhagavad Gita is for somebody at a certain level of development. You know, not here, not there. You know, it's kind of like beginning like that. You know? Somebody who, Arjuna, he's, in the beginning he wants to be a good person. He wants to be a bad person. He wants to get his wife's honor, because she deserves it like that, according to like this, you know, mundane ethics and morality. But now the first chapter is this point, this is the whole scene. You know, Krishna's trying to take us beyond this point. And Arjuna's making so many suggestions, like how to judge, like, well, you know, I can't fight this battle, but as I fight this battle, you know, all relatives will be killed, and the ladies will be unprotected, like that. You know, they'll be seduced by two big mustaches, and all these horrible things will happen, so many children will be born, they'll be terrible, and, you know. So what else is there? You know, I'll go to hell myself because of my family. But there's so many reasons like that. You know? But in the end, he's not satisfied. But simultaneously, he knows he can't walk away from it. This is, you know, it's other things like, you know, guilt, but she does give it to be again. That's it. First chapter. Right? Setting the scene. You got a study guide here. You know? You do. Any questions? Whatever. Any questions? You believe it. ¿Hay preguntas? The first time coming in contact with Indian philosophy or yoga? Oh yeah? Our edition? I guess there's so many translations. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, I see. In Castellano. Where are you from in Mexico?
I'm from the border.
Oh, Tijuana? Oh, okay. Yeah, it's temple. Guadalajara.
Well, I am from the south,
okay.
Yeah,
big festival every 2 years, Bhakti Yatra. She says congregational singing of the glories of the Lord is the essence of all spiritual happiness. That's what the angels do. Singing about how nice God is, his core qualifications, and it goes on expanding. Especially our students, our prime students.
What I thought, like, the situation Arjuna is in, like, we are doing this Bhakti Shastri, I mean, it's a different situation. And the learning Arjuna did,
yeah.
You know, were in this terror situation.
And you think work is not like that?
You know, like little things on the mind makes us anxious and unable to concentrate on the task at hand, and so many things happen. But imagining our given situation and then trying to learn something and then implement the techniques.
Yeah.
Seems to be too...
For Arjuna?
Yeah.
Well, he has great personality. But also you see after that, because finally he's convinced. You know, the whole conclusion, he talks about it from so many angles, the conclusion is, the conclusion is you should fight to regain your wife's honor, but not because she's your wife, but because she's my devotee, like that, because she's a human being. Like that, yeah? And so then he's fighting, but now he's fighting for God. This is what God wants. So I'll do that. And God wants people to be properly situated. So that's the whole difference. It's the intelligence like that. But even after understanding everything, how we should live life, right? You know? You should be a good wife, right? Why? Because God wants you to. Right? So then it's like, okay, my husband may be good or bad, my kids may be good or bad, this may happen, but okay, I'm doing this as for God. So put you way above everything else, then, like that. So, but even after that, so many times, he was saying, has some difficulty so many times, and here and there, so the Christian has to keep reminding him. And not reminding him, he's killed his son. He says, too much, it's finished. Just, the whole war is just too ghastly. And then Krishna tells him, reminds him, says, I told you this was going to happen. I told you this was going to happen. And so somehow or other, he's going to put your heart back together and you just got to go on. Now Arjuna does it, thankfully. Because the Kali Yuga is the dark side of the force. It's like Krishna's own evil, God's own evil aspect, the Kali Yuga. It's absolute evil.
I just have put arguments on based on compassion and simple reaction. And then that's one argument for not to fight.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was another thing that he came to fight to get the honor of the family and wife and things and take revenge.
Both
on material platform. And then Krishna induced him to fight. He didn't say that you forget the insult of your wife. I mean, why don't you fight for your wife?
Krishna
didn't say that.
He did, actually. He said, if you don't fight, all the women will laugh at you. And if you fight and win, you'll go to heaven. If you die, you'll go to heaven. If you win, you'll get earthly pleasures. So he gets so many material motives like that. But he kind of finally he's just like kind of like seeing if he's going to be satisfied with these inferior things. And the Bible is the same way. There's different levels of things. And so finally, the highest thing is just to hear from God, himself with my soul, every day.
So Krishna gave argument, but then took him further on.
In the beginning, I think most of those arguments are before he actually surrenders. after he surrenders and says, okay, I'm your student, I just talk to me in plain fashion. Like that. I'm not going to argue with you anymore. And accept what you say, none of my arguments are working.
But why is it like, first he doesn't want to fight, then his son dies, Arjuna dies, then again he goes for the fight, he fights everything. Like in the beginning, he puts so much argument that Arjuna wants to fight, but then Arjuna dies, then Arjuna goes for the fight. For a minute he gets.
In the beginning, then he becomes bewildered.
For like a short period of time.
Many times he'll become Krishna-like for life. It's like us. You decide, okay, if you become baptized, give up sin. That's what John the Baptist, he was going out and people had to give up drink and fornication and become simple life and surrender to God. And so he was baptizing them. But baptism means like the same thing. It means you're taking your vow at this point. Surrender. No more unnecessary arguments. No more artificial arguments. Real arguments, okay, and real doubts, okay. We want that. Prabhupada would actually like push Tamal Krishna and other people. And he'd say, well, yes, Prabhupada, he would push them. So finally these arguments and stuff would come out, And then when they face other people, like they'd already been through this, and he'd be answering some of the things. So actually Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter is this big, and after that there's just so many different kinds of things like that coming up. No, because if we are absolute, we're eternal, it's totally full of knowledge and ecstasy. So even the material world, we're looking for this. Because this is material life, we're looking to be carried away with the waves of sense gratification. Right? It's the gambler's song. He's looking for that card. This is Leonard Cohen, I quote everybody. He's looking for that card that is so high and wild, he'll never have to deal another. Like that, it's just like, oh, yeah, the game of dice is like, oh, yeah, some drug, some intoxication. Once you take it, you never come down. But of course, also he says that beneath the greatest love is a hurricane of hate, and the cross is trembling with desire. Very, very interesting, mm-hmm. Insightful guy. And the duality, you only get that pleasure if there's something evil, bad, dark, like that. Right now, maybe we should go a little bit like cooler, because it's hot. In wintertime, you don't want that, Okay. So, honor is only material world, material honor is only there when you've been insulted and everything else. Okay. And you may forget it in your head, right? But in your heart, it's still there for lifetimes. You see people come into this life, and everybody knows, especially women, little babies, they come with a whole life, character. Some are just terrified of everything, stiff. The others are like open like that. The whole world is meant to give me candy. So that's not DNA. It's like, they come, it's something very specific. They can remember, They remember things that happen. So these very deep things, we don't get rid of them. They're still in the heart. Huh? Yeah.
And I don't know what you think
of
how can
we begin to see what people's tendencies are. And it says that this body is like a boat, and the senses are like the sails, and the winds are our destiny that we produce. We got involved in that. And then the captain is the spiritual master, parents, society. And they use us, show us how to use these winds in the right way. One guy came to temple in San Francisco and said, my job is I'm a demon killer for Buddha. Okay, why not? You have a lot of anger and this kind of frustration. Anger, frustration. Okay, then you can use that to protect righteous people. The holiness. You demons, you hostile rascals, take this. Or else you like very nice clothes. How many people here like nice clothes? So then Krishna wears nice clothes, even in Catholic tradition, A beautiful dress for Mary and stuff like that. And you feel even more satisfied. So Bhakti Siddhanta says if you have some material tendency or ability, you don't use it for Krishna, you're a fool. No, this is how we make advancement. He's telling you, that's something to go away. He says, use your natural tendency to fight and compete and to protect the damsels in distress and all this kind of stuff. Use that. But sacrifice the results for me. There are different kinds of karma. One is to sacrifice the results. Other one is to actually sacrifice the activity. We'll discuss this later on. I can sacrifice my kids to Krishna, to God. I don't care if you take care of me when I'm an old lady or not. If you find God and become a priest, ever come back, okay. And other one is, but I have to be a mother. I just got to do that. I have a husband, kids, and like that. So Arjuna has to be a kshatriya, a warrior, right? But he can sacrifice the results to Krishna. Next of us, he can say, I'll also just sacrifice the activity to you. No matter what you want me to be, I'll be that. It's a higher level. It requires more purification. And finally, it's just intense, like the saints, intense mixture, blending with God. At every moment, it's just this rapture. So different levels of purification. So we see people have their karma, their nature, and we find see how that can be used. So I don't have too much, just kind of this introduction here. And Bhagavad Gita, of course, we're going to go through now 16 weeks or 6 chapters. And this first chapter is kind of giving you some idea of how we're organizing it. And then, second half of our program here. I mean, you asked to do this. Just turn this way. Thank you. I said, Rotar. This is the La Pantanaya. Vamos a ver un poquito. Un show. Show de PowerPoint. Bilingüe. Your bilingual PowerPoint show. Estoy pasando como 4 meses cada año más, 5 meses en México, Perú, Argentina, Chile, like that. Okay, you ready? So we have we did a show at the Ganesh Temple in Tennessee, and it's called Two Princes, Hamlet and Arjuna, like that. And you go to my folder. Go down. Below the screen.
Oh, it's screen hidden.
Okay, just see.
Oh, the USB drive, is it on here already?
Yes, isn't it my folder HPS? It's sticking up here in the bottom, down below that. Yeah. There it is. Try that. Clickety click. Can't get it. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. There we go. Any folder, any folder. Up. No. There you go. Okay. Clickety click. Now go up. HPS. See there? HPS on the left. There you go. Click it. Click. Okay. That world WC, last one, the very bottom one. Clickety click. Okay. Push F5. Okay. Two households both alike in dignity in fair Verona where we lay our scene from ancient grudge break forth to new mutiny and civil blood make civil hands unclean. Click. And civil blood makes civil hands unclean. Click. Two princes, Hamlet and Arjuna, personal reflections on civil life and social order, Hanuman Purushottam, Hugh Hudson Robinson. Can we say, possibly, that the two most famous works of literature in the world, East and West, are the Bhagavad Gita, Veda Vyas, and Hamlet, William Shakespeare. Yes, we can. You can say that. They are not superficial shows of godless energy. They are both works of deep cultural and philosophical significance. They touch us where life means the most, in our social and psychological worlds. Okay, back. Up here. So here Arjuna's Hamlet is contemplating about what is life, what is death, who are we, what do all these things mean. And similarly, Arjuna, before the battle starts, he sees all his relatives and friends assembled there, and he's wondering, what is this? I have to fight and kill all these people like that. Arjuna, my dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me as such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. O Janardana, Krishna, Although these men, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or quarreling with friends, why should we, who can see the crime in destroying a family, engage in these acts of sin? And Arjuna says, here's Hamlet talking to the ghost of his father. I guess I got to explain the story a little bit. Hamlet, oh, that this too solid flesh would melt, thaw and resolve itself into dew, vapor, or that the everlasting God had not fixed his canon laws against suicide, self-slaughter. O God, how weary, stale, flat, and unprofitable seem to me all the uses of this world. Time is out of joint, O cursed spite, that I was ever born to set it right. So both of them are in the same situation. I mean, this is why both of them are the most popular books. They're faced with these horrible social situations. They don't want to deal with it. Hamlet was called back from Paris, where he was studying, to Denmark. And his father, who he idealized, loved so much, this great heroic person, had died. And his uncle, who was this kind of like crafty, inferior guy, had become the king. And then his mother had married her brother-in-law, something like that, Hamlet says, the cooked meats from the funeral feast did but do double duty as cold cuts at the wedding feast. This is quick, like that. So he's very depressed about everything like that, And then some ghosts start showing up on the palace walls at night, and with the ice and snow, and it looks like his father, they call him to come and talk to him. And then the ghost says, your uncle killed me, like that. So you have to revenge my death by killing your uncle, murdering your uncle, and you have to call your mother, chastiser, in words you won't even use here, how she's acting like that. So he just doesn't want to deal with this. Same thing, it's a family fight. civil hands make civil blood makes civil hands unclean. So that's the beginning. This is why it's so intense. Okay. Ontology, the ultimate nature of things. So it's the first thing Krishna discusses in the Bhagavad Gita. What is reality? What is going on? And analyze things and look at what is reality. There's some very famous picture of this guy using the material world. And he sticks his head out. And see, like that. So, yeah, sun, moon, stars. Okay. As You Like It. We have the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Shakespeare has a play called As You Like It. act number something, scene 7. Jacques. All the world's a stage. And this is what I'm going to analyze now. And the men and women therein mere players. They have their entrances and their exits. And one man in his time plays many parts, his acts being 7 ages. Okay, adelante, forward. At first the infant, mewling and puking in his mother's arms. Then the whining schoolboy with his satchel and shining morning face, creeping like snail, unwillingly to school. Remember this? I don't remember this. I remember it. When I was like 6 years old, 7 years old, I remember we'd go to school, my friends, every excuse, not just, like that, okay, you know, okay. Next stage. Then the lover, sighing like a furnace with a woeful ballad made to his mistress's eyebrow. Anybody here at that age? Oh, Juliet, your eyebrows are two bows that have pierced my heart. Okay, but what's up ahead here? Then the soldier, full of strange oaths and bearded like the leopard, jealous in honor, sudden and quick in quarrel, seeking the bubble reputation, even in the cannon's mouth. And here we have a leopard with a cannon in his mouth. Then the justice in fair round belly with good cape on, with eyes severe and beard of formal cut, full of wise sayings and modern instances. You like that here? And so he plays his part. The sixth age shifts into the lean and slippered pantaloon, with spectacles on nose and pouch on side, his youthful hose, pants, well saved, a world too wide for his shrunken shanks, and his big manly voice turned again towards Charlie's treble, pipes and whistles in his sound. Okay? Last scene of all that ends this strange eventful history is a second childishness and mere oblivion. So ends teeth. Ah! Back up. Push one time and stop. So ends teeth. So ends eyes. So ends taste. So ends everything. Jai, William Shakespeare, key. So King Solomon has exactly the same analysis like that. Good meditation. And here's the same thing. You know, you see it all here. Where are you? Find your age. Where's Gopi? Right about here, no? Yeah. Where's Arjuna? Okay. Where's Hanbir Shakram? And where do we all go? Yeah, like that. And again. Yeah. Or as a person takes off old and worn out garments and puts on new garments. This is the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. First off, he says, you're worrying about fighting and killing people, but you're totally confused about which is the body, which is the person. What is the benefit for the body? What is the benefit for the person? Person is drowning, we hop in the water, we pull his jacket out. I saved him. No, you fool, he's drowning. Save him. You know? So this is the first point. Shakespeare makes the same point. Same analysis. Yeah. Bhagavad Gita takes a similar point of view. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, so the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So far we're kind of on the same platform. We are the passenger who rides the vehicle of this body. At the time of death, when the vehicle is finished, we are not finished. Difference. Donkey and the rider. It is clear to Arjuna, but not to Hamlet. To what base uses we may return, Horatio, he's his friend. Why may not imagination trace the dust of Alexander till he find it stopping a bunghole? That's the hole in a beer barrel, bunghole. Horatio, 'twere to consider too curiously to consider so. Hamlet, no, faith, not a jot. Alexander died, Alexander was buried, Alexander returneth into dust. The dust is earth. Of earth we make loam, clay. And why not of that loam whereto he was converted, I mean, not stop up a beer barrel? Imperious Caesar, dead and turned to clay, might stop a hole to keep the wind away. Oh, that earth, which kept the world in awe, should patch a wall to expel the winter's flaw. So he sees the body is just changing, but he's kind of thinking that we're going with the body. Different religions have different comprehensions about this, but in Bhagavad Gita it's very clear. Now the soul is like a diamond in water, it comes out completely separate. But in some different theologies we find different ideas about this. So right here at least he's kind of thinking that maybe it changes, but maybe we're the body. Let's go on here. He seems a little confused about the difference between the body and the soul. But when he meets the ghost of his father at the beginning of the action, you see how he views the life of the soul after the dust has returned to dust. So he's talking to his father's ghost. Hamlet, angels and ministers of grace, defend us. Be thou a spirit of health or a goblin damned, bringing with thee airs from heaven or blasts from hell. Woo! Thou comest in such a questionable shape that I will speak to thee. I'll call thee Hamlet, because his father's also, name was also Hamlet. King, father, royal dame. Oh, answer me. Let me not burst in ignorance, but tell me why this sepulchre wherein we saw thee quietly inurned hath opened its ponderous and marble jaws to cast thee up again. What may this mean? Horatio, your father's ghost. It beckons you to go away with it, as if some important impartment is a desire to you alone. Marcio, look with what courteous action it waves to you to a more removed ground, but do not go with it. Horatio, no, by no means. Hamlet, it will not speak, then I will follow it. Horatio, do not, my lord. Hamlet, why? What should be the fear? I do not set my life at a pin's fee, and for my soul, what can it do to that? Being a thing immortal as itself, it waves me forth again. I'll follow it. So here he's making this very, it's confused a little bit. You know, we put you in the sepulcher, we put you there, but the soul is different. The soul is immortal, like that. Okay? So how we, then, okay, ontology. The determination of our destination. So many things we can be. We can be the jot, we can be the queen, we can be whatever. These are all tarot cards, I think, like that. So many things are determining our destiny, like that. Right? The ultimate nature of things. Okay, Sankhya. Analyzing things down, breaking down like that. Epistemology is how you know. Ontology is what you know, and praxeology is what you do about it. Like that. But basically, all philosophy can be divided in those three categories, according to the Orthodox Greeks. Think this way.
She's coming from the back door.
No, she's coming from the door. It's okay. She's flying through the roof. Okay. Ontology, the determination. So what determines this? You know, whether we're going to go to hell, whether we're going to go to heaven. You know, we decided that we're the rider on the donkey. So we should be more concerned about the passenger than the burro, the donkey. San Francisco de Assis said, St. Francis said, this body is a donkey that we ride through this world. Don't spend all of your time taking care of a donkey. Right? Think about the passenger. Putting lipstick for the donkey, you know, very good glasses, you know, putting him up on a platform, giving him badges, you know, see my ass. Exactly, you know? Yeah. No, what about the passenger? Right? Yeah. So okay, what determines this? You know, both of these books talk about that. Bhagavad Gita. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. There they are. Okay. The king's state of consciousness, his uncle. The king. So Hamlet thinks that maybe this guy did kill my father, my uncle, but maybe this ghost is actually just a machination of the devil to try and trick me into killing my uncle, so I'll go to hell. So he's not quite sure, and different things, to act or not to act, to be or not to be. So some players come to Denmark. It's kind of a provincial place. He recognizes him from Paris. They see him, and he says, "You put a play on in Paris, you know, and it's very nice. I want you to put that play on here. And also, I want you to change the lines a little bit like this and that." You know? So then everybody comes to see the play, the king, the queen. It's the evening time. The torches are lit. And in the play, he has them reenact the way that his uncle was murdered. That his father was murdered. His uncle came when he was sleeping and poured poison into his ear and murdered him like that. And when the king, seeing all this, he becomes more and more agitated, and finally just walks out like that, you know. And Hamlet's watching the whole thing. And, yes, he did it. Since maybe about 20 minutes, 30 minutes later, he sees him, you know, alone, like that. The king is alone now after this. He's there. He says, "Oh, my offense is rank. It smells to heaven. It hath the primal eldest curse upon it, a brother's murder." So in Christian tradition, this is Cain and Abel. And it's a very old story. In the beginning, it was nobody but Adam and Eve. They had two sons, Cain and Abel. And Cain murdered Abel. It was the first fratricide, which is exactly what Arjuna is also worried about. You know, the primal eldest curse, a brother's murder. You know, "Pray can I not, though inclination be as sharp as will. My stronger guilt defeats my strong intent. But what if this cursed hand were thicker than itself with brother's blood? Is there not rain enough in the sweet heavens to wash it as white as snow? Whereto serves mercy but to confront the visage, the face of offense? And what's in prayer but this twofold force, to be forestalled ere we come to fall, or pardoned being downed?" We pray to God to keep us from doing bad things. And if we fall down, we pray to him again to please help us become purified. See, very intelligent guy. By prayer, we can become free from sinful reactions. There's Cain and Abel. Yeah, so this is his conclusion. By prayer, we can become free from the reactions to our sins. "Then I'll look up. My fault is past. But, oh, I am still possessed of those effects for which I did the murder. My crown, my own ambition, and my queen. May one be pardoned and retain the offense? Help, angels, make us say. Bow, stubborn knees. All may be well." 10th offense to chanting the holy names. Maintain material attachments. Right? Okay, let's go on. He's praying. Enter Hamlet. Hamlet. "Ah, now might I do it, Pat." Now he is praying. Now comes the sword. And so he goes to heaven. "And so I am revenged?" That would be scammed. Yeah. "A villain kills my father, and for that I, his sole son, do the same villain send to heaven? Oh, this is higher in salary, not revenge. He took my father grossly full of bread, with all his crimes broad-blown, as flush as may. And am I then revenged to take him in the purging of his soul when he is fit and seasoned for his passage? No. Up, sword, and know thou a more horrid intent when he is drunk, asleep, or in his rage, or in the incestuous pleasure of his bed, at gaming, swearing, or about some act that has no relish of salvation in it. Then trip him, that his heels may kick at heaven, and that his soul may be as damned and as black as that hell whereto it goes." This is Bhagavad Gita. He knows. You know, our consciousness is the time of death will determine where we go. But it's not like, okay, I'll do an evil life my whole life, and I'm going to die, I'll pull the Bible out or a picture of Mary and say, like, the last minute. No, because it develops. It's your consciousness. The Sanskrit word is bhava. It means more like your frame of mind, your perspective. So even if you do something bad at the time of death, if your whole life you've been a good person, your perspective is good. And that little thing, it's gone away like that. So, but Hamlet thinking, you're praying. Okay. So you're still alive. Hamlet goes away. King rises and leaves. King, my words fly up, but my thoughts remain below. Words without thoughts to heaven never go. Bhagavad Gita 3:6. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells upon sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. You have to have both aspects like that. Yeah. It's a whole deep philosophy. Summary, ontology. Both Hamlet and Arjuna face the most difficult problem, separation from the ones you love. They both know that the body is a machine made of matter that will perish. They both know that our consciousness at the time of death determines where the immortal soul will go. Arjuna understands reincarnation. Hamlet seems to think that the soul itself may be the body. They both know that prayer can save us if it is accompanied by proper action. It's very similar books like that. Yeah?
So like in the fourth point, Hamlet seems to think that the self may be the body. So
yeah.
When he mentioned that he's not going to kill him, when he's in prayer mood and all that,
yeah.
So why were you thinking that? Then now you're saying this like...
Because he's talking about the body becoming dust, and now that's Alexander. Alexander's come back to become a cork. Right? It just says that. Alexander the Great, the whole world was stood in awe of this dust that was Alexander. It dies, it becomes earth. And he says another place too. Another example. He says that, a great king, the king, right? The king dies like anybody. The worms eat his body. Some beggar catches a worm and uses that to catch a fish. The fish eats the worm, he cooks that fish, eats it. In this way you can see how the body of a king can pass through the guts of a beggar. So it's still, this is many variety of Christians, so many varieties of Christianity. But this is one thing that, for example, some Jews say, don't pierce your ears or your nose, because when you're resurrected, your body is resurrected, you go to heaven and you have holes in your ears. Like that. Yeah. So they're very varying degrees. It's like it's not quite clear. They see Alexander remains the dust. Alexander comes back as a cork in a beer barrel. But no. And you see, we've been sepulchered, my father, put him into a place where he's resting there. He's resting. But his soul has gone to heaven. Another thing is that the soul is something which is kind of like in the Greek thing. It floats around, but then the body actually then kind of like reconnects up with it at some point and goes to salvation like that. So these are all kind of, because the other philosophy is eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Beg, borrow, and steal, because in the end it's all finished when you die.
That's what many people think today.
They kind of think that way, yeah. But here he's saying, no, there's a reaction for what you do. Yeah, and it's in Hamlet. Okay, we'll go on. Okay, so look, two more topics very quickly here. Then okay, because there's so many things like that. I'm just trying to give you a sample like that. Other topics. What about free will, destiny, and proper action for his mother, ladies? Okay. Yeah. Free will, destiny. Bhishmadev to Yudhisthira, Mahabharata, Shantiparva. Bhishmadev, after the whole battle, everybody's killed or lying here, and Bhishmadev, the grandfather, we discussed, and he's immobilized, lying there, but he won't die until he wants to. He has that blessing. So he's waiting for the right time, to leave. And then he finally gives instructions to Yudhisthira, Arjuna's older brother, about destiny and being the king and all these things. And the very first thing he says is, you have to understand that basically the king is a man of action. Some people say destiny determines whether we become intelligent, whether we get a good degree in college, whether we become this or that. Other people say it's dependent upon your free will, determination. He says, ultimately, free will is more important than destiny. Because even though your destiny is like that, without some free will, execution won't become realized. On the other hand, even though you have a certain destiny, by your will and determination, you can change reality. So that's Bhishmadev's instruction to Yudhisthira, like that. Yeah. Okay. Then we have a few other sources here. Next. Hamlet. This is the most famous line in the whole thing. And he's discussing this whole thing. know, this is what everybody pays, $50 to get a front row seat, or $500 to hear Sir John Gielgud, or this other guy, Richard Burton, to say this one line. Everybody's just waiting like that. Okay, now I can say it now. To be or not to be, that's the question. or to be or not to be, that is the question. But that's Arjuna, to take arms against the sea of Kauravas, and by opposing in them, to die, perchance, to sleep. Okay, we'll give it. It's the same thing. He wants to go ahead and fight them like that, or else to not be, to go to the forest, to give it all up like that, right? To engage in action, or else to try to renounce things. To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing in them, and to die, to sleep no more, and by asleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that the flesh is heir to. It is a consummation devoutly to be wished, to die, to sleep, perchance to dream. Next. No. Oh, sorry. Yeah, okay. Ah. there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come. So Arjuna wants to renounce it all, walk away to the forest, but can have all his memories, all his thoughts. You know? When we have shuffled off this mortal coil, must give pause. And there's a respect that makes calamity of so long a life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's fall down, the pangs of despised love and the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that the patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he could make his own quietus with but a bare bodkin. A bodkin's a short sword. That's all it takes, all these problems, this suicide. So Arjuna also wants to commit suicide. He wants to go out.
They kill me.
That's exactly what he says. I'd rather stand undefended and have them kill me than engage in this battle. The same way, Hamlet doesn't want to call his mother a royal like that. He doesn't want to murder his uncle like that. He just wants to, he said, but Stephen still, I would count myself king of infinite space, bound in a nutshell, if only I did not have bad dreams like that. So this is it. We're going to carry our mind and thoughts with us. You can't avoid it. Go on here. Yeah, okay, this is kind of too long here. And thus a native hue of resolution is sickled over with a paler cast of thought, and enterprises of great pith and moments with disregard their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. You could just put this exactly out of Arjuna's mouth. Yeah, okay. So later on, everybody, this army, the king of Norway, he's asking permission to cross Denmark to attack somebody to fight this little piece of land, you know, fight over this little piece of land like that. And they see them, Hamlet sees them going by and they're going to fight. And he says, how all occasions do inform against me and spur my dull revenge. What is a man if his chief good and market in his time it be but to sleep and feed, a beast no more? Sure he that made us with such large discourse, looking before and after, gave us not that capability and godlike reason to fuss about us unused. So this is Buddha Yoga. First thing a Krishna is suggesting to Arjuna, be thoughtful about things, be considerate, use your intelligence. Don't just be blindly. Now whether it be bestial or oblivion or some craven scruple of thinking too precisely on the event, mental speculation, a thought which quartered hath but one part wisdom, and ever three parts coward, I do not know. Why yet I live to say this thing's to do, sith I have cause and will and strength and means to do it. Examples gross as earth exhort me, a father killed, a mother stained, excitements of my reason and my blood, and let all sleep. This whole thing about what to act upon, you know, what's the right cause to act. Okay, so okay, he's trying to decide what to do. Kill his uncle, not kill him. Wait till he's engaged in nasty activities or not. And his uncle's beginning to suspect this kid knows what happened like that. So he says, okay, you should go back to school now to Paris. Here's a boat. Go then. These two guys, Guildenstern and Rosencrantz, will go with you. And then halfway across this thing, he says, tells Horatio, Because then he comes back up. He's finally tossed off the boat, and the water takes him right back to Denmark, like that, right back to where he wanted to avoid it, like that. Okay, and so Horatio sees him and says, "My God, you know, what happened?" Hamlet says, "Sir, in my heart there was a kind of fighting that would not let me sleep. He thought I lay worse than the mutinies and the Bilbos. Something rashly, and praise be rashness for it, let us know our indiscretions sometimes serve us well. When our deep plots do fail, that should teach us there's a divinity that shapes our ends, rough hewn though it how it will be." This is his conclusion. He finally, these guys were sleeping. He went in and got the letter that they were supposed to give on his behalf. Opened it up and it said, "Kill my son, kill my nephew Hamlet." Right. So he changed it and said, "Kill the messengers," like that. So when they got there, they were killed instead. Okay, you know. But then he got tossed off the boat. So his final conclusion is this, same as Arjuna, is that everybody has a destiny, like that. And he said, maybe roughly cut, like this, right? But there's certain limits beyond which you can't go in your life, like that. You may say, Ambarish Das, one of our devotees, he's a grandson of Henry Ford, and he says he is, no matter what he does, he can't escape this wealth. He has something like, if I go out, it's like, $25,000 a month coming in, just for doing nothing. Nothing. Every month, $25,000. Okay, you spend it the first month, the second month it comes again, like that. So somebody else, they have this. They try their very best. They work their very best. They cannot, get more than $250 a month. And you begin to see there's a destiny I have like that, Yeah. And so that's his conclusion. And the same as Arjuna, the same thing from Krishna's help is that everybody has a certain destiny, and all we can do is play our part, according to God's arrangement like that. Yes. Yeah.
And then now the point's been that we do have some free will to change our destiny.
Sometimes. Yeah. That's the whole point. Sometimes no, we're just forced. Like that. Yeah. You're forced to be a woman. Can you avoid that? Yeah, that's your future. I'm forced to grow old. Right? Dog is forced to, react to things like that, like a dog, you know? Somebody put some food down and two dogs start fighting over it and you pull them apart. Nobody chastises them. Control yourself. They're dogs. It's just they can't. Even they may feel ashamed. So you see dogs, they feel ashamed that they did something like that. They just couldn't control themselves. So in the mode of ignorance, we're forced. In the mode of passion, we can see the right and the wrong, but the desires are so strong. Like that, In the mode of goodness, okay. Now you have your choice. Like that, but you have a choice. Yep. Are you going to steal the money or not? Nobody will know.
All right. So only in the...
Okay. But your father has terminal bone cancer. You need $100,000 for the surgery. Where you're working now as a mature young lady, you're shuffling the business around, and $65,000 kind of slipped out of everybody's attention, and nobody will ever miss it. Nobody knows it's gone like that. Are you going to steal it or not? Now it's the mode of passion. It starts to become like, wow, he's thinking and this and that and everything else. So sometimes, it's clear. When we make our choice, so nobody can blame God, Because sometimes he gives us a clear choice and we make our choice. Okay. So we get our karma because of that, our destiny.
So what should we do in that situation?
What with the money? I don't know. it takes a lot of consideration like that. That's why... many, many details. And so in the end, there's so many Dharma Shastras and so many scriptures that give us these laws. So the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Paritya. You should ask God. Ask God what to do. And we should be developed enough where we have that connection. Where we can get guidance through saintly people, through the scriptures, through intuition. Like that. Yeah? Through good association. Yeah.
So I was trying to see what the line there is.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. Can you give an example of an action that would be trying to change your destiny but not lording it over?
Okay, so we're not, yeah. Okay. In Calcutta. One man became a devotee, associated with the devotees, and with the temple president. And he said, "It's very nice, I got your books, it's very clear, and it helped me so much." But he said, "But I have this problem. See, I don't kill the animals, but I'm working for a butcher. And it's so ghastly and all this stuff. And I know it's not a good position to be like that. You know? But in India, you have a job, it's like, you know, you have to keep it sometimes. Otherwise, no income. So you can't just walk away from a job in India like that, poor person in Calcutta." So the temple president said, "Okay, pray to Krishna and stuff like that. And, you know, and this, you know, like that." So about 3 months he came back and he said, "Okay, I got a new job. I'm just down at the end of the street, at the Shakespeare Shalani, there's Motilal Barnasidas. He's a big publisher of books. And I'm working there now. I got a job there." Like, wow. He said, "But it's very strange, you know, because I think it was my destiny, because the man I'm working for is named Robert Butcher." Yeah? So still working. So Krishna goes ahead and Maya says, "Well, you know, you don't break your own rules, and this guy did this, and he had this reaction like that. So what does it say?" It says he has to work for a butcher. And Krishna says, "Well, okay." And Maya goes, "Oh, okay, you win again." Or Radharani does that, that Krishna. Yeah, so that's true. You know. Or else, again, this free will is there. And we can, you know, I was coming off the altar one time in San Jose, Berkeley, and was really frustrated because these things were happening. So I was going to go right in the prasadam room and eat lots of halava and sweets and just drown my sorrows, you know. But then the telephone rang and somebody said, "Oh, it's a call for you," and stuff, you know. Because I'm praying to God, "Please give, I can't control myself, please help me." Okay, the telephone rang, okay. Now I could see. I had something to do, my body occupied. So then it was my choice, you know, go eat the halava, you know, take the phone call, eat the halava, take the phone call, take the phone call, eat the halava. So finally, that time, I took the phone call. But it was like this, you know, my destiny was maybe pushing me towards this. And so I did the effort. You know. Again, sometimes, no. I mean, I've seen other times, I tried my best, you know, but I could not keep from overeating. I really tried. I did everything I could. And afterwards, that my body suffered. But I didn't suffer. Yeah? I could see that. My body was acid indigestion. Because then Krishna said, "No, you tried your best. This is not your fault. We know you tried your best, so I'll protect you at that." And I didn't identify with it. Yeah? And my body learned something. Brother St. Francis, Brother Ass, learned something like that. Yeah? So it's the whole Bhagavad Gita. That's why it's so many chapters. That's why Arjuna is discussing this thing again and again, like Hamlet, again and again, because it's not so easy. Understand all the intricacies.
So somebody who was working for the butcher, his free will would be to change his job.
Yeah.
And his trying to change his destiny was his will to change his job.
Yeah, because he went from being working for like a gross butcher to a butcher in name only. Like that. Yeah. So again, sometimes our destiny is to have, we are destined to have free will, material free will. We're destined to have free will, so it's make choices. You can make choices. But these are all still material choices until finally God descends from the spiritual world and gives us like absolute choices, choices that produce no karma, either good or bad. But by dealing with our toys properly, then our parents see this and they give us something a little more sophisticated like that. You take care of your bicycle properly, then you get a motorcycle. Take care of the motorcycle properly, you get a car. So we take care of our material dollies and activity properly, then Krishna says, "Okay, now I'll give you something, you know, superior." Okay?
Do you think, okay, Maharaj, if sometimes a really complicated situation, if we just leave it to Krishna, he will go and do that?
Yeah, ultimately, I always remember this phrase, in Vrindavan, only Krishna and Balaram kill demons. Yeah, so you see that nobody else is there. So we can always just say, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, like that. You know, just like Draupadi, too complicated. So there's nothing wrong in that, in just praying to God. But then he may give you intelligence, and then you should, you know, but no, you should take, so Arjuna, he did that, he surrendered to Krishna, right? But then Krishna said, "No, I want you to do this and this." But he thoroughly explained everything, so he had no doubts, like that. Okay, the last part here. Krishna's decision. Okay, here's Krishna's decision about all this, about free will. Final, the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. If you become conscious of me by my grace, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life. If you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your own nature, you will have to engage in warfare. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction, but compelled by the work born of your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti. So? Okay, the final part. Proper action for ladies. Varna ashram dharma, stri dharma. So varna ashram is this whole social system for kings, priests, what else we got? Merchants, you know, artisans, laborers, and the different, you know, childhood, married life, retired life, and renunciate. So there's a whole system of ethics and morality like that described. And for ladies too. And this is to put us in the proper position, you know, to see God in the mode of goodness. Okay. Player king. From the play, remember it's the play? So what one part of the play was for his father, uncle, and the other part of the play was then for his mother, like that. There you go. Player, the king in the play. For 12 years we have been married, like that. Player king. So many journeys may the sun and moon make us again count ere love be done. But woe is me, you are so sick of late, so far from cheer and from your former state. Now what my love is, truth hath made you know, and where love is sized, my fear is so. And as my love is sized, big, my fear is so. Great poet, huh? Faith, the king says, faith, I must leave thee, love, and shortly too, my operant powers, their functions leave me due. And thou shalt live in this fair world behind, honored, beloved, happily, one is kind. For husband thou shalt, queen, oh, confound the rest. Such love must needs be treason in my breast. A second husband let me be accursed. In second husband let me be accursed. None wed the second, but who killed the first. Hamlet, Wormswood. That means like wood rotten by, now watch the cake here, push the button. Oop, okay. Second cake. Player king, the instances that second marriage move are based respect of thrift, but not of love. A second time I kill my husband dead when second husband kisses me in bed. Player queen, I do believe you think what now you speak, but what we do determine, off we break. Purpose is but the slave to memory, of violent birth the poor validity, which now like fruit unripe sticks on the tree, but falls unshaken when they mellow be. Woo! Yeah. Player queen. Nor earth to me give food, nor heaven light. Sport and repose lock me from day and night. To desperation turn my trust and hope, and anchor's cheer in prison be my scope. If once a widow, ever I be wife. Player king, 'tis deeply sworn, sweet, leave me here a while. My spirit grows dull and fair, faith, fain, I would beguile the tedious day with sleep. Player queen, sleep rocks thy brain, and never come mischief between us a twain. Exit. Hamlet to his mother. There we go. To his mother, the real queen. Madame, how like you this play? Queen, the lady protests too much, methinks. Like that. So, there we go. Buy the book. Okay, now we ask the ladies here, what do you think about remarriage?
Way too much hassle, I can imagine. I'm trying to do the whole thing over again.
Yeah. Okay, we got again, another question here for, I get a little senior, Manakshi. That's a taxi. Okay, it's right out, you're married, you're 18 years old, your husband's 18 years old, you have a kid. He goes off to fight in the war in South Pacific. He dies. And so you're 22 years old. Your boy's 4 years old. Your husband died in the war, the Second World War. Now, should you go your whole life as a widow? Okay, an Indian girl. In United States, right after World War II, this was a big discussion. When I was a little child, my grandmother's sister came to visit, and she was all dressed in black, completely. So I asked, why is she in black? He said, because her husband's dead like that. You know? So when I was a child in America, it was very common for widows to dress not in white, but all in black like that. Not so long ago in American history like that. So at the end of World War II, it was a big discussion like that. And so you can see, like, the magazines, Look Magazine, Life Magazine, articles were coming out about this and talking about people and stuff like that. So the conclusion was that a 22-year-old girl and stuff like that, it's just too hard for her to go through a whole life like that. And also there's lust and this thing like that. Okay, so she wants to get remarried like that after some time. I mean, after 6 years. Prosper says 6 years is okay. It's third class, but it's okay. 6 years, she wants to get remarried and you know, ask her first husband like that. It's okay. I understand. Okay, and nobody should criticize them like that. You know? But if she wants to stay a widow her whole life, then everybody should respect her decision as being very brave and help her in life like that. You know? But before that, I think remarriage was, like, even in America, was considered, like, you know, kind of low-class thing. So it's different dharma for ladies than there is for men. So the point is that Shakespeare, so I go on and on like that, it really brings these things out and it really makes them, like, you know, makes you think about them. If you come, especially if you come from this Western background. If you come from Spanish background, maybe not so much. I don't know, come from Indian background. But in your English background tradition, it's re-injected into our culture again and again. You see, from the time of Hamlet, there's a commentary by Cato. Always, every commentary, within every 20 years, there'll be somebody writing a commentary, or there was a play not too long ago called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. And it took those two characters and just had their whole life and how they passed through Hamlet like that. You know, because who are they? You know, they had their whole life and finally just kind of passed through Hamlet like that. So the guy got his PhD thesis from, you know, basing it. To be considered a great authority in the English language, you have to make some commentary on basically Hamlet. George Bernard Shaw has his thing. Everybody. So that's our tool. It's a good tool for especially this kind of people, like Western people. But even Indian people, you can see this is, oof. These are the questions you really face like that. You know? Yeah. So, any final comments or questions? Okay. So finally he came to his conclusion. He came to his conclusion that there is a destiny, even though it may be roughly cut, and we can't avoid it. I tried to avoid this. You know, the king tried to kill me to make me avoid it. You know, I was tossed off the ship and the ocean brought me back. I didn't drown. So, okay, I have to go ahead. So then the king, on his side, people say that Shakespeare wasn't a philosopher. He was a playwright. He was creating a story, all this. Philosophy is there, very deep, you know, but he was really, you know. So finally the king is beginning to appreciate that Hamlet is out to get me. Somehow he knows what's going on. So then Hamlet, the whole process, thought the king was behind the curtain. So he stabs through the curtain, yeah, and kills the... Hamlet thinks that the king is behind the curtain when he's talking to his mother. So he stabs right through the curtain. And it's actually not him, it's this stupid prime minister there. You know, like, oh my God, you know. But then, the prime minister's son was his friend. They grew up together like that. But now he has this hate, you know, for Hamlet because he killed his father like that. Although Hamlet's trying to act like he's mad. You know? So then the king starts playing on this. His uncle says, yeah, yeah, this and that, and you should get your revenge. Okay. So then he has a friendly game of dice, and he tells the Laertes, he said, okay, the swords have their tips on them and stuff, it's just like that, but yours has poison on it, and one scratch will kill him for sure, like that. And that doesn't do it in, if the whole thing goes on, you're not scratched at all. A little scratch is all required. You've got to kill him, just a little scratch, you know. And then people won't blame you, you know. And afterwards, I got a nice, you know, you'll be thirsty afterwards, and I got a nice big glass of burgundy or claret there, poison like anything, you know. Okay. So a friendly game of dice. The queen is there, his uncle is there, the different people are there. Then it's like Laertes, and they start fighting like this and that, going back and forth. And then finally, what happened? Laertes cuts him like that, in a scratch, you know? And oh, like that, and this and that. Then they start fighting on some more, and then he knocks a sword out of his hand, they change swords, you know? And then, you know, they're fighting again, the Hamlet cuts him, you know? And then the queen is becoming more, the queen goes, the king's going, oh my God, it goes just like that. You know, what's going to happen now? You know, Laertes, you know. And then the queen's going, oh, it's so heavy, it's so intense. I use some wine. So she takes, you know. So now, oh my God, the king is sitting here like, God, oh, this, you know, she's poisoned, this guy's cut him, he's got that, you know. And then Laertes falls down. Hamlet said, what's going on? And he said, my God, what a rascal I am. You know, I didn't feel like a man, like you know, Karna, right? I wasn't like a man to face you in battle. The king has poisoned the sword, now you're going to die, and I'm going to die too. He dies, and then Hamlet kills his uncle like that. So then the uncle's dead, his mother's dead, his friend's dead, and he's dead. Now then, the guys are coming back from Norway. Yeah, and so he has to give the final speech about nobility and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, like this and stuff. But for directors, it's this gigantic problem because all these dead bodies are lying all over the place like that, and you got to like kind of walk around and stuff like that. It goes like that, you know, like this and that. You know. Yeah, yeah. It takes 4 hours to put the play on like that. Yeah. I don't know how many times. I would say, practically speaking, every English speaking actor, this is kind of like his dream, you know, to play Hamlet. Like that, in a big performance like that. Because it is, it's just the crescendo, the tensions, everything else like that. And Ophelia's heard all these different people like that. It says that Shakespeare, the commentaries in the works of Shakespeare are like the Himalaya Mountain. There's so many commentaries. But the commentaries in Hamlet are like a veritable Everest. So many things. So that's the only thing we're doing. Everybody, my nature, I like this. Somebody else, you've got to find your nature. Everybody has their ability. Somebody's a cook. Can't say a damn thing, but can cook prasadam like anything. I know one lady exactly like that. You know? She just wasn't very good expressive verbally, but she always prasadam things and so on. And people say, "Wow, this is great!" You know, Nobel laureates even like, "Oh, wonderful." She said, "Yeah, the books are just as good. Give me three." That was all she would say. Like, the books are also very good. Oh, okay. You know, so everybody has their nature like that, and use it for Krishna. Okay, the altar. Well, you know, all this stuff is coming down. I mean, children, there are what are called feral children. You know, they just somehow they get tossed out of the house and roll down the hill and they get lost, you know, and so and the animals raise them. Some wolf comes along with the pups and she sees this kid crying and everything else. It's a baby, so she lets him take milk, you know. And so one puppy. His mother died, and so one cat had kittens, so she let him, you know, take milk from her. And then later on, when he was big like this. You know, she was old. She was sleeping. He would sleep right next to her like that. There's really big pictures like that. He would, you know, like my mama. You know, yeah. And so, not in 1935 or something, some like monkey or something was stealing corn from the fields and stuff in Italy, and they finally captured him. And it was like a boy about like 7 years old with like long hair and everything else, but just like a, you know, like an animal like that. You know, and they tried to like civilize him and everything else, but couldn't do it. And finally, he got pneumonia and stuff and just died like that. You know? So at a certain point, unless you start getting, you know, civilized information association, you never develop it pretty much. You know? And so human being, it's always descending. It's not genetic. It's like coming. The culture is being passed down. The culture is being given to you at a certain point. You're raised up by cultured human beings. If you don't have that, you just become an animal. Yeah? So it's always there. It's always coming down. Socrates says it's coming from some ancient source, and then, you know, Shakespeare—they're all taking these things from Socrates and people like that. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, Aristotle went in through Arabic language. He came into Thomas Aquinas, and Aristotle came in. So you can, if you look like this historically, you can see that, you know, it appears that they're coming from India. Yeah. 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 Well, thank everybody
very much for our small presentation.
And
Professor Gupta has some copies of this. This is the written format. It's almost the same, a little different like that. He prints all the same booklet like that. You can give to your friends at work.